Hello and welcome to the AP Top 25 College Football Podcast. I'm Ralph Russo, college football writer with the Associated Press. Just one guest this week. That's because when you have Andy Staples on, there is only room for one guest. The host of Andy Staples on 3 joins us to talk about a topic that a lot of people are thinking about these days. That is, what is the future alignment of college football? There has been some talk about a super league that isn't really a super league, but Andy and I use that as a jumping off point to look into our crystal balls, suspend our imaginations, and try to figure out what is the next version of big-time college football. How many schools, what banners and brands does it live under? What will be used to sort out who is in and who is out? Thanks for listening to the AP Top 25 College Football Podcast. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, just about anywhere you like to get your pods. If you like what you hear, please give us a good rating and review. It helps college football fans find us. It helps us find more college football fans. And away we go. Joining me this week on the show, frequent guest, my good friend, host of the Andy Staples on 3 show, Andy Staples from On 3. How are you, Andy?
Hi, Ralph.
Well, we actually have, I'm going to cross my fingers here, a little bit of a quiet off-season week, but that's, you know, the portal's coming next week. So we'll
What are you talking about? We had a wacky Florida State ACC court ruling.
That's true. It's never really quiet.
We had dudes say they were into the transfer portal like 5 days before it opens. We got Larry Nerd in the transfer portal on the basketball side. It's all happening, Ralph.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'll buy that. There's no such thing as a slow moment in college sports or college football. But I was thinking about, so last week The Athletic wrote about a plan that had been circulating that the ESPN wrote about actually about a month before. This idea of a super league, not really a super league because it has too many teams to be a super league. But the idea I liked in general because it was an attempt to keep the structure of major college football that we have now kind of in place, but create some new rules and foundations around it to preserve something similar to what we have now. It's very important to understand this is not happening. The SEC and the Big Ten are not talking about this. They don't. Now, maybe down the road we get something that looks different, but it just got me thinking to the idea of what's next. And last time I was on your show, when we did the front end of this Home and Home, we took a listener question about sort of the future structure and realignment, and we had some interesting discussions about maybe we roll back some of the realignment that has done right now that has no regional basis, that maybe we get to a bigger format where we have smaller divisions. And it looks actually a little bit more like what we used to have because it makes geographic sense. And it just got me just thinking in general, like, where are we heading with all this? I want to start with you, Andy, on the idea of like when you sort of saw last week's idea, because I think there's going to be a lot of these types of ideas floating around college football over the next few years. Where did your head go?
I was just glad somebody was talking about it publicly because they need to talk about this. They need to discuss this openly and publicly because this is coming much faster than I think people realize.
Yes.
Like the House versus the NCAA case is the one that is kind of driving all this. And what that is it's former athletes suing based on NIL money that they would have gotten had the NCAA and the schools not been a cartel operating a horizontal price fixing scheme. And that's going to cost the schools a lot of money no matter what. Like they're going to have to settle this thing. It could wipe out the NCAA bank, you know, vault essentially.
And the conferences are also defendants.
All the schools are on the hook. Yeah, the schools are essentially on the hook for this. And so they are going to have to pay for this somehow. Part of a settlement, or at least something that could reduce the dollar amount of a settlement, is a system that would saying we're switching to a system that will actually comply with the Sherman Act.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think they kind of come up with that pretty fast if they would like to do that. And beyond that, they actually need a system that complies with the Sherman Act. Because if they don't, they're going to keep getting sued over and over and over and over again. Like, I had an administrator tell me a couple weeks ago, it was a good point, and I hadn't thought about this. It's like, you could sue over any rule and probably win. Mm-hmm. And then this person brought up the 20-hour practice rule in football. Mm-hmm. He's like, one player could sue saying we're forcing them to practice 20 hours, and another player could sue saying we're limiting them to only practicing for 20 hours and hurting their NFL chances, and they would both win.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the crux of the problem being that you have a system where you're treating athletes as employees, but they're not. It's almost as simple as, like, that's the, I mean, there are probably more complex and more thorough ways of explaining that, but ultimately you have an employee-based system, but you're not treating them, they don't have employee-based rights.
So they're going to have to drop the charade and just make them employees and bargain with them. Mm-hmm. Now, it's a lot harder to do that than it is to say that.
Sure.
Because you got to figure out how you set it up. Are they employees of the conference? Are they employees of one big organization, which is what this group wanted to do?
Yeah.
They wanted to create a league and a governing, or like a central office, essentially like the NFL or NBA or MLB, where everybody would be in this league. The players would be employees of this league. And you could have contracts, you could collectively bargain. And I think this was a blue sky thinking thing. This was a perfect world. See if we could get everybody on board with keeping as much of what we know to be college football, as much of what we know to be the teams that make up major college football. That was the hope of these people. The problem is the SEC and the Big Ten have worked really hard to separate themselves from everybody else.
Right. And now you're asking them to take a step back.
Yeah. Why in the world would they want to share equally with these people? They've worked really hard to not be equal to them. So that's the issue that you're going to run into. And the fact that it's done by conferences, and that's why we always default to the SEC and the Big Ten become like the AFC and the NFC, because they're the most similar. They act the same. They kind of live in the same world. And so if they were to create a system where athletes are employees of the conference, where they negotiate a salary cap with the athletes, that sort of thing, there it would be very similar. It would be very competitive. And the other leagues won't be able to do that.
Right. It would also be
the question is how will they do that? How many teams does it end up being? That's the big question. I keep thinking it's probably around 48. I hope it's not. I hope it's more than that. But realistically, I don't know that it gets much bigger than that.
So I think it led me to thinking about this question of what sorting method is used to sort the teams, to create these, okay, you're in, you're not in this, but you're in this. And that's, we can have some tether to that, right? Because I think when you look at what that idea is, it's a very big tent, but what if we narrow the tent and say we're going to have the Big Ten and the SEC, and they're going to be sort of tier one, and there will be a tier two. Listen, the other part of this too, Andy, is I think that we have to let our imaginations run wild. I think if you're in the Big Ten and the SEC, I think more so the Big Ten than the SEC, you have to be very conscious of the fact that, like, what you're trying to do is preserve your bottom, right? You're trying to preserve your whole conference, but you have to be very cognizant of the fact that at some point, Michigan and Ohio State are going to look across the table and ask Purdue and Rutgers, like, what are you doing here? Like, why do we need you? Now, how you prevent that from happening?
I don't know that they're going to do that, Ralph.
Well, maybe, like, maybe not.
Saying that, I think the least likely thing to happen is the SEC or the Big Ten ditches somebody.
Well, but it's not that they ditch somebody, and we've talked about this. It's they leave. It's the biggest, all of a sudden, the top of the SEC and the top of the Big Ten say, we're out of here to go create something else that are the Saudis are funding, or whoever PE is funding, or this offshoot NFL funding.
I, I've not heard any sort of appetite for that.
Me neither.
Me neither.
But I also think that we need to be.
I also wouldn't admit to it if I were them either.
We need to sort of think beyond our. Have a little imagination here. That's what I keep getting that when I get deep into this conversation with people, and you're a person, that's what the reason why I had you on, because I like you're a person I think that is fun to get deep into this conversation. It's almost like, hey man, let your imagination run wild. Maybe we're boxing ourselves into this SEC Big Ten. And again, it's a sorting system. And I remember Jack Swarbrick, the now former AD at Notre Dame, I think he's now former officially, or maybe in that limbo state. But and I remember him talking a few years ago about how the sorting system might be academics. Like at some point, certain schools are going to say, listen, we want to be with schools that sort of emphasize a certain level of academics. But ultimately, I think what's happening, what we're leading towards is we talk about big brands, but you can't legislate around brands. Brands is not tangible, but you can legislate around budgets. And mm-hmm. I wonder if the sorting system will be at some point, how much can you spend? If you can spend this much, and then, you know, because that's what's being thrown out by Charlie Baker and others. So I think, I'm wondering what you think the sorting system will end up being.
Well, I think similar budgets is akin to similar brands.
Right, but again, you can't legislate brands. You can legislate budgets by saying, hey, here's a line item, right?
Yeah. It's almost like the Potter Stewart thing, the definition of obscenity, you know, mm-hmm. when you see it.
Mm-hmm.
And so you and I can probably make a list of the top 50 programs that we think would be in there. And I would bet that our first 40 are the same.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd start to deviate after that.
Most likely.
But I wonder, like, if you were thinking about this from a cold economic standpoint, like if you were a TV programmer, wouldn't you just say that where everybody agrees, those 40 that everybody agrees on, that's your league?
Most likely. And that's one of the reasons why, again, just as you said, I hope it's much bigger than that. Or maybe we end up with, going back to my thought of a tiered system which is kind of where they were getting at with the quote unquote super league that was being thrown around last week. And again, that's not really a super league because it's got too many teams in it.
Yeah, I was going to say it's a league. It's the FBS.
Yeah, it's basically just FBS, but structured differently under one umbrella company. If you have, let's say, again, I know I have to read the book, the book about English soccer. Like, I've never read that book, and I feel like it's actually
it's
neglectful because I'm not.
Greg Sankey loved it. It was, I think, probably very instructive as to some of the stuff that's happened.
No doubt.
Because if you look at how the Premier League formed, if you look at how television influenced it, it's pretty similar to what's been going on in college football.
But so I end up wondering, like, could you do something where you have a Premier League at the top, then there are another 30 or 40, again, that there's a tether there. They play play each other in non-conference.
Yeah.
There's a playoff system that involves this next 40. And again, those 40, and now this is where I'm going to tie in the ACC. If we start thinking about an inevitable end to the ACC as we know it now, which might sound a little bit strong, but I don't think it really is, what would the ACC schools left behind look like? Well, all of a sudden, mm-hmm. that looks like a bunch of very smart schools, right? It looks like Duke and Wake and G-Tech.
Syracuse
Boston and BC.
College.
Like, it's Eastern and, well, I mean, Stanford. I don't know what we're going to do with Stanford and Cal. But I do wonder if, like, the next tier is budgets, but also, like, hey, we're going to be sort of the elite football Ivy League of some sort. Maybe
I think the Ivy League.
We're workshopping this all.
Has that.
We're workshopping this all now. So, yeah.
So The Club is the name of the book. Joshua Robinson and Jonathan Clegg.
Thank you.
If you have not read it, everybody, get thee to Amazon. It's awesome. It's a great book. And I don't even like soccer, and it helped me understand the business of what's going on.
And I've heard so many people talk about it that I feel like I have read it. But honestly, it's been neglectful for me as far as what I cover to not have read it.
Well, also, these guys are such good writers and reporters. Like, I've got their Messi Ronaldo book to read when I go on vacation this summer. And again, I don't even like soccer, but at this point, I'll read anything these two write. There's your book club.
Yeah, this is Andy and Ralph. Andy and Ralph's book club. So let's talk about the ACC for a second here, because I do think that is, while we say the Super League is not happening because the Big Ten and the SEC don't want it, the playoff is also locked in. Like, I think we are looking at, if you're wondering, like, what's the timeline on the next step of this? It's pretty simple, right? It's just the TV contracts. The playoff is locked in for 6 years. The Big Ten is locked in for about six more years. The SEC, I think, a little longer than that with
ESPN. They've got 10.
I think we're locked in a little bit over the next four. I think, let's put it this way. I think for the next 3 years, the concentration will be on what is the relationship between the players and the schools, the athletes, right? I think they have to, it goes back to what you were saying, they have to figure that out first before they can figure out the bigger structure that comes with, okay, who's playing who. And I think once they figure that part out, then we can start talking about what the next alignment is going to be like. But I do think you're probably into about 3 years, 3 to 4 years of the alignment being somewhat stable, except you have the ACC. Right.
Yes.
Like, so where
in the Big 12,
when you think of what could happen with the ACC, like, how does that work if everything else is sort of locked in? If all of a sudden the ACC starts cracking, but then we're not really sure what the next version of this is going to be.
Like, again, these things can change. Especially like when you have a contract only with ESPN for the playoff, like you can change that if you want to down the road.
That's true.
But like 2026, that season feels like a key date, because I would suspect, if I were a betting man, that Florida State and Clemson and maybe others who want to be out of the ACC are out of the ACC by that point. Mm-hmm. That's what I would guess.
Sounds about right.
And that the lineup of the SEC and the Big Ten is what it's going to be at that point.
Okay. So you think the next step of this is the ACC fractures, the SEC and Big Ten scoop up those, divvy up what they want, and what the territory best looks like. And then we come to the point. Then we're looking, how does the ACC coalesce or rebuild, realign? And there's enough schools in the ACC that I do think there will continue to be an ACC.
Some kind of league like that, yes.
Yeah, I think.
And I mean, look, they didn't take Cal, Stanford, and SMU out of the kindness of their hearts.
Right.
They took them because their TV contract says you have to have this many members or ESPN gets to renegotiate it.
Without question. Right. They needed the numbers to make sure that they continued to have that. And then we have sort of looked at the Big 12 as, well, one of the reasons why there's peace in the Big 12 is we talk about alignment and what you're willing to spend. The Big 12
Everybody's
has
the
all
same.
That. They're all the same, right? They're all the same in the Big 12. However, you know, the fact of the matter is they don't want to continue to be the same, right? They all aspire to be more than that.
Correct.
If you had to pick in the Big 12, I think their contract runs out in 2030. Mm-hmm. What schools could all of a sudden become like, oh, now the SEC is interested in them. Big Ten is interested in them.
UCF's an interesting one.
Yeah, that's
it's a very young school.
Yes.
Very young. Generations behind everybody else in terms of its development as a school, as an alumni base, all that.
And enormous.
But it is massive, and it is pumping out potential future donors and fans, mm-hmm. where, you know, it was a commuter school. Like I went to high school in Orlando. It was a very much commuter school, viewed as the 13th grade. You lived with your parents and drove to campus if that's where you went. That is not what UCF is like now.
Right.
It is very different now. It is a, you know, campus all on its own. It has its own campus culture. Like when I was in high school, if you went over there, everybody's wearing Gators and Seminoles gear. Now everybody's wearing Knights gear. Like it is a
place. And it's
place
tethered
where,
to a big city.
Yes. Yeah. And Orlando has really embraced it. And so I don't know if like 6 years from now, they're going to be far enough along in their development, but let's say they're wind up being good in the Big 12 for most of those 6 years. That's one you look at as like a future play,
mm-hmm.
where, oh God, they have 60,000 students. Look how many alums they're pumping out. This could be a valuable member 20 years from now, that sort of thing. So that's an interesting one. Utah, consistently great at football.
Mm-hmm.
And now, are we sure that's not just Kyle Whittingham? I don't know. But
and the flagship university of a state, right? I mean, that's what
right.
These...
And academically, a very good school, yeah. A growing state. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's one that you would definitely look at. So
can I throw
and,
one
and
at
I know
you?
Everybody wants to say Colorado and the prime effect. I don't. When Shadura leaves Colorado, we'll see what happens. But
I mean, I don't know. That's a top. You can't talk about Deion in a few minutes and wedge him in. That's a topic for another day. Can I throw one?
Exactly.
At you? I want to throw Kansas at you.
Okay.
If now, because it's really not just, first of all, it's not just football that Kansas.
Well,
Kansas,
and that's
Kansas's
what,
entire.
I was going to bring this up when you were mentioning the tier system.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why I think the tier system is what a lot of people would want to go for. Because they do want to keep that basketball tournament product.
I think so.
Similar.
Yes.
Like, Greg Sankey can say what he wants. Economically, from a TV standpoint, they shouldn't change the basketball tournament at all.
No, the idea that an all Big Ten SEC, even if the Big Ten and the SEC are even bigger basketball tournament, that will not have the same appeal as this.
No, you want it to look like what you've got now. So you do want to maintain an affiliation with all of these different schools.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how the tier system works. Now, Kansas is an interesting one because Kansas has money.
Mm-hmm.
We know how great they are at basketball. They are willing to invest in football.
I mean, they're about to.
If you look
to,
at what they're
right?
doing with
they're
with Lance
literally
Leipold,
in the process of.
Yeah. Yeah. They have no problem investing in football. So I think Kansas may be the victim of just some really bad hires in a row. And they could be fine in that new world because academically they're fine. Like they would fit in anywhere. Financially, I think they'd fit in anywhere. So as long as they keep having, like, if they have a few more good years in the Big 12, I think they'd be very attractive.
I think so, too. I think it's a matter of, again, doing the investment thing, which is what they're doing now. And, you know, as
well, they're investing smartly. Here's something to consider. Like, if you're an AD, if you're trying to figure out what you need to do
mm-hmm.
for investment, like Kansas is redoing its stadium.
Yes.
But they're not just redoing the stadium for 7 Saturdays a year. They're building an entire entertainment and retail and hotel and everything district around the stadium. So they're essentially helping rebuild campus infrastructure.
It's a pro sports model too. This idea
yeah,
that
you're
going to have
a
district.
Yeah, there are revenue streams attached right. to that go beyond 7 Saturdays a year.
Right.
Like if you're an AD and you're worried about luxury boxes and how many bathrooms you have, stop it.
Yeah.
Don't waste your money. Like if you're going to invest, do it that way. Otherwise, invest in better players because better players make better stadiums.
Yeah, I talked to Travis Goff, the AD at Kansas, about this. And I, you know, my question was, do you think you're investing in yesterday's trend? And he brought up when I talked about facilities, I was interested to hear. I understood that they were doing some different things, but I wanted to get his perspective on that. And again, so the question was, do you feel like, you know, have you thought at all that you might be like chasing yesterday's trend? And he explained this idea of entertainment district and hey, we have to do NIL too, and we have to invest in our coach. This entertainment district idea, not to get too off on a tangent, I think this is what Danny White's trying to do in Tennessee as well. This idea of building something around, and you need I think to do that effectively, you need your school to be based in areas that have more than just the school there. You know what I'm saying? It got to be a little more than just college town, I think. Knoxville.
I mean, Lawrence doesn't really have – no, I mean, I think you can do it with just the school. I'll give you an example. And this wasn't done purposely in conjunction, the school and the town. It just happened to work out this way. Like College Station. The difference in College Station now and College Station 15 years
that's
ago
fair.
Is –
that's fair.
Incredible. And if you try to book a hotel room in College Station on a random Wednesday, it's expensive because there's always something going on there. And they built a lot. And it's not just because that, you know, everybody wants to go see the Aggies play, but they've built a lot around there. And it sort of coincided with the improvements to Kyle Field. I don't think they did it on purpose, but I think you look at marrying those two concepts together, and that's what Kansas is doing. It's smart because people love, like, one thing the pandemic taught people is they love college towns. Like, college town populations are booming since the pandemic.
Yeah.
So that's the path if you'd like to get your stadium redone.
Yeah.
The old path of we got to raise $300 million to put some new bathrooms in and better concession stands, that is not happening anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the today's new investments, right? Right. Where is the money? If the money's going to go towards players and the money's going to go towards, if you're going to do facilities, it's going to be this. Anyway, I want to get back to Kansas to me is the one when we start thinking, because you also still have to think about the map, how you build sort of bridges between or gap, you know, bridge gaps between your schools if you're going to have 25 and 30 team conferences. But then you also get back to what we talked about on your show with your listener who had a really good idea. I think he was a little all over the place in terms of like the structure, but I think the core elements of this idea of once a conference becomes 30 teams, it's not a conference. It's a bunch of mini conferences within them. And I think what I would hope, what my hope is that at some point you get a dialing back of some of the, not the realignment, so to speak, but you recalibrate the regionality into some pods or divisions. And I really, and I think that could, now listen, I also might be just Pollyannish here and trying to think of something that would make me feel better and make it look like something I want. But I think that's possible.
It also makes sense. And I realize that a certain segment of our listeners here are going to get mad when I suggest this, but like, the NFL's divisions exist the way they do for a reason.
Right. All pro sports have divisions for reasons.
Like Dallas isn't actually in the East. It on a map, Dallas is not in the East. But Dallas, the Cowboys' historical rivals are Washington, the Giants,
and the Eagles.
Philly. Like,
but even
you're not going to break them off from there.
But even that one, though, Andy, is an anomaly because pro leagues do understand that, like, no, we do need to have our teams closer together here. Like, it actually helps. You know, every pro sports league has, in some time in the last few years, realigned its divisions because they wanted to create more. There was a point when the Atlanta Braves win the NL West. Do you I think you're old enough
Dale
to remember
Murphy,
that.
Dale Murphy, baby, heck yeah.
Right. The Giants, one of the last great.
The Braves and the Giants and the Padres.
Yes, one of the last great pennant races in the old system before wild cards was the Giants and the Braves battling it out in the NL West. Go look it up. It was a great race, by the way.
It created the greatest NLCS ever, the Braves and the Pirates with Sid Bream chugging around third base.
Exactly. So I think you do need something. So again, when I start thinking about sorting methods, I do think we might get back to, I think it'll be budgets, and budgets is a stand-in for brands, but I think to create rules. Here's one other thing. And this is, we talk about the NFL and realigning, and I wonder this, if this is also maybe a place where all of a sudden reality sets in and a bunch of schools go, whoa, whoa, whoa. When you have that Super League alignment and you're aligning with budgets, do you also then start creating rules that create more parity. Because now you can do that. If you're a professionalized model, and now all of a sudden, all those schools that have had just inherent advantages for years maybe lose some of those, whether it's, you know, player drafts or some model that is different from just straight up recruiting, salary caps, something that creates balance. And now all of a sudden, if you're Ohio State or you're Alabama or you're LSU or even Georgia, like, you can't do it the way you used to do it because now we're putting fingers on the scales to create parity. Do you think we'd ever come to that?
I think they're going to try. But let's be real, Ralph. They've been trying to do that for 100 years. But, and they only made it worse with their rules. But
once once you do professionalism, once you get the players, that player relationship in line to something that looks like more.
You'll never be able to have a draft. So that's going to be your first stumbling block on that. But I will say, you could definitely. Now, here's the thing. Like, Indiana's been rich for a while now. They still can't seem to get it right.
Fair. And I still think that we might be.
And like certain, and it's the same thing in the pros. Like, there's certain ownership groups that are just bad at this. Mm-hmm. And certain ones that are better at this. So I think you'll always have that too.
I'll be interested to see that because I do think that we underestimate how much. Listen, Nick Saban's awesome. Nick Saban, who's the greatest coach in college football history. But you couldn't do what he did at Kansas. Like, if he went to Kansas State, he can't win six national championships in 12 years, right? He can probably make Kansas State the best version of Kansas State ever and maybe even win a national championship. But, like, there are certain – like, this is not a meritocracy college football to a certain degree. Yeah. There's a certain amount of this, like, you're baked into where you're – in the pecking order, you're baked in. Last one for you. And if I was to say which of the two big two is more sort of, let's say, vulnerable. If I'm looking at my conference structure and I think, boy, I have to really worry about, like, what if all of a sudden the SEC goes, no, we want it all. Ohio State, come with us. Like, I think the Big Ten, I'm not even going to ask, I'm going to say, I think the Big Ten has more to worry about because it has a greater
gap. The SEC has a better product. All you need to know is they release their schedules within a few weeks of each other for 2024. And when the Big Ten released its schedules, they were first. You're like, oh, this is so much better than it was. This is great. Mm-hmm. And then the SEC released its schedules. And you're like, oh my God, this is amazing. And this is why I find the Big Ten, if I'm Fox, which essentially runs the Big Ten, they, like, if Florida State and Clemson can get out, go get them.
Yeah, I think
you need them in your football schedules because your football schedules are not as good as the SEC's and it's not that close.
But it also speaks to that idea of again, if you start tiering, like, these, you can tell me Minnesota has money and Rutgers has money and Purdue has money, but they also, unless you create a draft system or something like that, they're never going to be quite as good in football. So again, like, I'm with you. I think that the Big Ten, if I'm Tony Petitti, I feel like I have more concerns internally about the next 6 to 10 years.
Well, right. And that's why when people watching what's going on with the ACC and Florida State and Clemson say, well, who's going to want them? Well, the Big Ten needs them for the reasons I just explained. And if I'm the SEC, I might just take them to choke off the Big Ten. Because then what are you going to do?
Well, right. Notre Dame's
the only one left on the board at that point.
It's my theory of when we talk about, like, well, what's next? And, like, is what's next just an arms race between the SEC and Big Ten? Now, there's ways that could even be stopped or tamped down, but they involve legal. I mean, they're involved maybe, hey, now you're the target of an antitrust lawsuit and you guys have to figure out a way to work well together. But I think that when people talk about, well, where's Florida State and Clemson going to go, or Florida State especially, because they've been so loud about it, well, where are they going to go? I do think that right now there are people within the Big Ten who are like, God, do we really want these guys? Like, we're trying to implement this coast-to-coast conference. But, you know.
Yeah, and then the Fox execs will go, Let's see what the schedule would look like if we put
that's
them
exactly
into it.
It. Right. So,
oh yeah, we want them.
Listen, yes, exactly. I think ultimately they will find a home because I think what is more likely, the more likely scenario that we're heading towards is the arms race. Is the SEC and the Big Ten figure it out? Right. They kind of figure something, some kind of structure out in terms of player relationship between the players and how you're going to compensate these players. And then it becomes just an arms race of, okay, we have this brand, you take this brand. I think that's where we're heading. But again, you have to use your imagination. You have to be able to think beyond what you know, Andy. That's this whole conversation has been trying to like, let's maybe there might be something that's not in our purview. That's not in our, you know, in our imagination.
Well,
it's
that the could Saudis jumping in.
Yeah.
That's, we joke. I hope that would never happen.
Yes.
I don't think it would, but it's interesting because you have this push and pull. Like, you have people saying private equity may jump in and because they see that this is an undervalued, underutilized asset. And I think the people running it are like, no, we're utilizing it just fine.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know who's telling the truth there.
Yeah.
To be perfectly honest.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And again, you're also talking about there are people in power who would like to keep their very powerful jobs.
Of course.
And that's another factor in all of this as well. Well, Andy.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, if you're Greg Sankey or Tony Petitti,
sure.
Why you would immediately make this Super League that Lynn Perna and the number two at the NFL, that all those people were working on, you would immediately make that dead on arrival because then there's a commissioner who's over you.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want that. Like, Greg Sankey is more powerful than Charlie Baker right now. Charlie Baker is the president of the NCAA, for those who don't know.
Yeah.
Greg Sankey's got a more powerful gig than Charlie Baker does. Anything that Greg Sankey would agree to that puts the SEC in a league with other leagues, the commissioner of that league will then be more powerful than Greg Sankey. And that's why would you do that if you're him?
Right. And then the SEC, again, is sharing with schools that it's already just established through the playoff, it doesn't believe it's equal to, right? Like, it has already just established a baseline that says we are better than you and more valuable than you. We're not rolling that back. So I don't think we figured anything out, Andy, but I do enjoy the conversation, and maybe we'll just put it on the calendar next year. We'll see what happens over the next year. And next year on April, April 10th, we'll come back and see. Well, I'll listen to this. I'll see how we did, and I'll see let's try to figure out now.
I realize we only got a minute and a half here, but I realize this. Think about this. If I had told you this time last year that Florida State and the ACC would have sued one another, that Clemson and the ACC would have sued one another, and the Pac-12 would have dissolved, what would you have said?
I don't know if I would have been completely outside the idea. The
it wouldn't
realm
have sounded completely
but it would have sounded
all
crazy.
Of that stuff.
Yeah, it has happened.
You'd have been like, no, come on.
Right. 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 Again, we have to think beyond our imagination. We have to push the boundaries of our imagination when you're thinking about the future of college sports. Andy Staples on 3. You can hear him about, 13, 14 times a week. He is on every day.
Bombarding your earlobes and your eyeballs.
Yes, with great content. Andy, thanks so much for coming on today. Now I owe you one. Again, we'll keep doing this home and home. Always appreciate your time.
All right. See you, Ralph.
And now 3 and out. First down. The next portal window for college football opens on April 15th. Thanks to the Attorney General of West Virginia, anybody can transfer as often as they want in college sports right now. Hence, that led to reports that USC defensive tackle Bear Alexander was heading for the portal again. He started his career at Georgia, transferred to USC before last season. That turned out not to be true. Alexander tweeted he was staying put. How exactly he and Lincoln Riley decided to work things out, if anything did need to be worked out, well, that was all done. I would say one word of caution when it comes to transfer reporting, the reporting of transfers. It's a tricky space, and I'm not begrudging or critiquing any other reporters, but a lot of information is coming from a lot of different areas, and these are not binding contracts, so people can kind of say things and change their minds, or a kid can wake up on the wrong side of the bed one day, decide, like, this isn't really the place I want to be, and information gets out. But again, that information not being binding creates a lot of space for this type of situation, which is, I kind of want to go in the portal today, but by the time we get to tomorrow, I don't think I really want to go in the portal anymore. Anyway, scratch Bear Alexander off the list of possible players your team could be fishing for out of the portal come April 15th. Another player reportedly heading to the portal with a little more solid reporting behind it, and of course, one that probably makes sense a little more if you think about it, is Oregon State running back Damian Martinez. Martinez was one of the best backs in the Pac-12 last year and an engine behind a very good Oregon State team. The brutal reality of the Beavers' new place in the world continues to set in. I am sorry, Oregon State fans, it's not cool that you have to go through this. I think the NCAA, or whoever is making rules right now in college sports, needs to consider eliminating the spring transfer window. Just let the winter window be the window. In a perfect world, the spring window would work because it would allow players to get a real look at where they stand with their current teams during spring practice. The reality is, though, it's just another opportunity for schools to tamper. And as much as I get a little tired of coaches complaining about tampering, it's not something that's great for the sport. I generally lean toward erring on the side of the players should have more freedom. But in this case, I think the second window is less an advantage for players who might be stuck down the depth chart and more to the advantage of schools with a lot of collective money to throw around in the spring. Second down, a quick Florida State ACC lawsuit update. There was a hearing in Florida earlier this week, the day before we are recording this podcast. A judge considered the ACC's motion to dismiss or pause FSU's suit against the conference. The judge said he's going to let the case move forward. Now, that is a little unusual, because the ACC's case against FSU in North Carolina is also moving forward. And it's unusual for courts to not give preference to the first to file when there are two similar cases. The ACC preemptively sued Florida State in December, the day before FSU filed its suit against the conference. Both sides tried to get the home court advantage, so to speak. This is the best way I can sum up where things stand. It's going to be weird to have both of these lawsuits moving forward at the same time. I don't think it will get to this. It will probably end up with a settlement first, but we conceivably could have two cases where two courts hand down rulings that are in direct conflict of one another. That's not great. So that really can't be allowed to happen. The two sides first must get this mess sorted out. Where will the case be heard? In North Carolina, where the ACC is suing, or in Florida, where Florida State is suing? That needs to get sorted out before we can dig deeper into the merits of each individual case. And of course, there's still now another case in South Carolina where Clemson is suing the ACC, and the ACC has in turn sued back Clemson. So don't forget that when you're on your ACC lawsuit bingo card. Third down. One last point I wanted to hammer home from my conversation with Andy on the future of college football. What the Big Ten and SEC are currently trying to do is protect their second-tier schools, protect the conferences in general, but more importantly, really protect their second-tier schools and prevent those top brands in those conferences from seeking a better deal. Right? We're not really thinking that the Big Ten is going to throw out some of its bottom feeders, or the SEC to do the same from some of its schools that don't necessarily aren't the highest earners. It's more the concern that the top of those conferences would move on to something else. So what if you're in the SEC and you're in the Big Ten, your long-term game plan is to make sure that your conference stays viable, and to do that, you need to make your top tier happy and protect your bottom tier. I think what could stand in the way of another entity peeling away the tops of the Big Two, plus maybe a few from the ACC, and who knows, maybe even a few out of the Big 12, to create a smaller Super League, maybe 30-ish schools, I think what could prevent that is the fear of a truly level playing field. Think about it. If you created a smallish NFL-style league with equal revenue sharing, rules at 3-2-1. Think about it. If you created a smallish NFL-style league with equal revenue sharing plus rules that create parity, because, again, that's what you need. If you're going to have only 30 teams, you need them all to have a path to being successful. Then you're asking Alabama, Ohio State, Georgia, Michigan, LSU, and others to relinquish their inherent advantages and live in a world where it's possible to be bad, and not just 8-4 bad, like legit 2-10 bad, right? In the NFL, good franchises hit bad years. They have terrible moments, terrible patches, because the league is set up to create parity, and you have to be good at running a franchise. You can't just be richer than the others. Even in the sports where there is no salary cap, like baseball, sure, money gives an inherent advantage to the Dodgers and the Yankees, but there are plenty of teams, my Mets, for example, that spend a lot of money and don't do it well because there are rules in place to create a certain level playing field and parity. In other sports, in real professionalized sports, everybody has a chance to be very, very good and very, very bad. And that's not the case in college sports, where to a certain degree, floors and ceilings are built in. We've talked a lot on this show heading into next season about how we might have to redefine success and how schools might find themselves slotting into new positions they have not traditionally occupied. If we then whittle this down to 30-odd teams, professional model where it comes to player compensation, you are absolutely going to level the playing field when it comes to the actual competition in the ways that schools are not going to like. I think that's the motivation to keep the likes of Rutgers, Vandy, Mississippi State, Northwestern around if you're the Big Two superpowers. You really don't want, if you're Ohio State and Michigan, true parity, true level playing field. And I think as you start exploring things that look like more professionalized super leagues, you stray into an area where all of a sudden you are giving up a lot of your advantages. That's the show for today. I'd like to thank my producer, John Radcliffe, for making me sound good. You can find this podcast at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, just about anywhere you like to get your pods. Please follow so you do not miss an episode. I'm Ralph Russo, the college football writer with the Associated Press. Thanks for listening, and come back for more next week of the AP Top 25 College Football Podcast.